Good afternoon. I'm Chandra Safran from KXLL. My Anupak name is Iklugan. Welcome to you and big thanks for being here. Jarek, can you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Sure. My name is Jarek Hope Lang. My Tlingit name is Slutin. I am from Sitka, Alaska. I'm Raven Frog from the Kiksati clan, and my clan house is the Point House.
Kwana, I want to start by apologizing in advance if I violate any cultural protocols and for what are likely to be some mispronunciations of Tlingit words. I'm interested to learn more about the Point House restoration in Sitka-Kwan, what is today known as Sitka. But before we dive into those efforts, I want to offer some background to our listeners on ownership in Tlingit culture. So, Jarek, for our listeners who are not familiar, can you describe the structure of moiety, clan, and house?
Yeah, well, we have two defining moieties, eagle, raven, and there's also just wolf clan as well, further up north. I won't go into that. I don't know too much about it. And I also apologize up in advance if there's things I don't know. This is new territory for me as well, being a product of nuclear family homes, which was what happened in my generation. This is new territory for me as well.
Can you describe the Point House restoration project?
I don't remember the house in my memory. I have to say that this house wasn't in its physical approximation around when I was alive that I can remember. So I'm familiar with the land and I've seen the land. That being said, I do believe the concept, and why I refer to this as a restoration and not a rebuild, is because a clan house doesn't cease to exist, even though it may not be there in its physical manifestation. So the way this project presented to me is I grew up in Sitka. I've seen clan houses, and I was familiar with the term, but very unfamiliar with who lived in them and why. And in doing my own research, found where my clan house was or used to be. And that's how I approached this project. It was brought up to me by one of my elders, Bertha Karras, who's recently passed. And she made very evident to me in one day in our walks, she pointed at a piece of land and just said that, Jarek, that land is your people's land and you need to work on getting it back one day. And it planted a seed in me that I didn't know that I needed to nurture and develop. And so it's a new path for me. It's not something I grew up in. It's not a house that I grew up in. It may not even be a house that I've seen other than in picture. But so it's a new concept to me as well. And I'm approaching it that way with sensitivity. And so that's where this started from.
How has Kiksati land been transferred out of the Kiksati clan? And how is this effort correcting that?
The way that this property, a native allotment or restricted deed property, is managed by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, or BIA. And historically, they passed down through Western culture. So they're not following Tlingit protocol for passing houses down the proper way. And often what happens is people without a will or these properties that are managed by BIA, if someone is to pass, the property would then go to their kin. Well, if it's a male heir, we're a matrilineal culture, so a male clan house leader, the house would then be passed, if it goes through BIA or Western law, it would be an opposite moiety and or clan, and this is where things, I think, get convoluted. I really need to be respectful and cautious because I don't want to speak on other people's clan houses or how things are passed down to them. So it was my great-grandma's brother who was the last housemaster when our house was active, and it went to their grandchildren. And when I approached them after my conversation with Bertha Karras, organically the conversation came up of what is your plan for the property? What do you want to see done? And when I realized that I might be able to do something with it, and that's where the restoration or rebuild comes through, my family grew. First of all, I'm related to that person. So a person that I didn't know became my family. And we spent over a decade developing this relationship. It wasn't an overnight success where I approached a person and said, hey, what are you doing with this? That's not how we approach things in our own culture. So I actively have somebody who's new in my family who agreed with what we were doing. And I think I think I took my time and was delicate to the situation. And I think when somebody sees you and knows your heart, our culture is about leaving things for the next generation. And I truly feel like the gift that this person left me was the gift of putting something up that I can leave for the next generation. And I'm not sure what that message is yet, but I think more will be revealed.
You mentioned earlier that you grew up in Chicacuan, mm-hmm. in Sitka. Can you describe the Point House land?
It's small. It's I think it's 1,697 square feet. Ironically, one of my good friends lived right next door in a house that's butts up right against the property. It's in downtown Sitka. It faces the Alaska Native Brotherhood Hall. So I was familiar with where the land was. It's in what we call the village, or near Back Street or Cogwonton Street, depending on where you we call it Back Street in Sitka, but it's really Cogwonton Street. Yeah, it's small. It's humble. It faces the water. You can see Mount Edgecombe. It's interesting. Now that I know the history of it more, I feel the need to want to preserve that. I have. It's a very interesting feeling inside me that it somehow needs protection. That it needs. I want the longevity of it beyond my existence. I want to see it there. So it's an emotional thing. So like I said before, the Point House exists to me. There may not be a house I can walk into currently, but it exists. The land is sacred to me. And, and really, the Point House used to exist on Castle Hill or New Tlane in Sitka. And when the battle with the Russians happened, then they were behind palisade walls in what's now the village in Sitka. So the house has moved before as well. So this wasn't its first area of placement. And it's interesting because it's when you think of the history of that, where where the house existed now is a state park, the place where we fought occupation is now a national park, and the property as it stands now is managed by a federal government, and it's crazy to connect all these dots and see how this natural migration happened or unnatural maybe be a better word of how this place was moved. And so maybe that's what puts more important to it, because where it stands now or where it will stand has been an evolutionary history as well.
How will restoring the Point House fit into Chicacuan as we know it today?
It's something that's interesting to me because the vernacular architecture of Sitka and certainly Catlian Street and Back Street has a certain feel and presence that feels historic to me. And I think we can't negate that tourism is such a big part of our industry and what we see around us. But when I go home, I mean, a lot of things like we just talked about, like the State Park of Castle Hill being a colonial land site, or a Russian Orthodox church in the center of Lincoln Street being a sign of Russian occupation. And you talk about E.W. Merrill, who set up Totem Park. I mean, the poles are facing in a way that they're not even facing the right way. I mean, it's also a managed colonial landmark to us. And so the village encompasses something different to me. And clan houses and clan property mean something different, because I don't think people even know what they're coming for when they come to a place like Sitka. I mean, I think maybe they have an idea, but they don't know what they're looking for. So the cultural richness of a clan house and the visual importance of it are so maybe misunderstood or not explained well enough, because there's so many colonial landmarks, but really, are you coming to see those? So in the effort of wanting to rebuild, I'm kind of trying to go against the trend of that. I want people to see the richness of our culture and the survival of our culture and the future of our culture. And so I think the rebuild is really important to that, because it speaks to who we are and where we stand and there'll be some conviction in a rebuild of saying, this is where we are. I want people to pass it. And I want conversations to be had of like why we're doing what we're doing. We're not negating that we are nuclear people now, but we're not turning our back on our past either. I think that's the biggest difference. So this to me can be a cultural landmark. It can be a place that people look at and see. And it's palpable. You're looking at something. You're looking at living history. And I think that's the most important part to me and why it's so personal to me of getting it rebuilt.
When was the last time that there was an actual physical structure that was on the Point House land?
As far as I can tell, it was demolished by the city in the 90s. James Polson in Sitka has done a clan house thesis with Boston Architectural College. And I believe he has some photos of the demolition as well. I have yet to see them, but it's something I'm looking at. I do have a photo of it when it was essentially vacant, but I believe in the early 90s it was taken down, late 80s or early 90s.
I also wanted to understand how restoring the Point House location is important for the herring protectors movement in Sitka, which has been a growing movement for many, many years. I'm speaking of Louise Brady, who is a core organizer behind Yakuik, the annual herring protectors gathering. Why do you think the Point House is a good gathering place for herring protectors?
First of all, we need matrilineal movement in this. Like the rematriate movement has been so powerful, and seeing really some beautiful, strong women, her daughter Dionne, just Louise, and just seeing how they just took this energy and they didn't sit back and wait for things to happen. That inspired me to start moving forward. I was like, well, if I don't do something, who's going to do this? And you can only be frustrated with yourself if you want action, but you expect other people to do the work. And what I see from people like Louise and Dionne is just this real strength and solidarity and stepping forward and saying, we represent this land. We're the stewards of this land. And if we're leaving things to future generations, we need to manage this now. So much like they're looking at bringing attention to the commercial herring industry, I'm looking to bring attention to our clan and our clan house culture. There's so many ways that you can be a contributor to culture. And I think with the land back movement, this is a really new concept. I think land back as a tribal concept is a lot easier to understand than as a clan centric project. And this is really not about the tribe. This is about the clan. So the way that she brought as herring protectors that energy to our clan, I can maybe push towards this project. And we've seen big pushes in language revitalization. We've seen big pushes in the arts. Now we're seeing these women protecting our herring and going towards the commercial industry and not being afraid to say what they have to say. And I feel like I didn't want to. First of all, I don't think I'd be a great artist, nor am I would be a great linguist. So what's my contribution to my culture? What do I bring to the table as well? When I see these powerful people sitting around or not sitting around being in action, what do I bring to the culture? And if I'm not going to be a linguist or a carver or an artist, what do I have? And I think that this is my contribution. This is what I want to share so my contemporaries can be also a part of it. And as much as I say that this is a clan-centric thing, I think this represents all clans as well. I'm not saying that the model that I approach is the right model for everybody, but it starts the conversation. And ultimately, it will reflect positively on everybody. This is meant to be a representation of Sitka, Southeast Alaska, Tlingit people, our strength, our solidarity. So it's not as much as this is the Point House. This is for all people. And when we potlatch it, we'll celebrate it as such. So I look forward to that day.
Is the Point House a strategic location for herring protectors?
I think it's central to who we are. I think I get where you're going with this. Yeah. I think it's central to who we are because of its location. I mean, we're facing the ocean, which is where our food was from. Our previous clan house was literally blocks away. Our where we fought for tribal representation in ANCSA, the Alaska Native Brotherhood, Camp 1, directly across the street. I mean, that's the importance of it. It's location. As much as the building will be as well, all tie into that. There's so many reasons why it's important for us to build. And I also can't help but think it with where the Tlingit people or Kiksati people moved back to after the Battle of 1804 when they were behind the Palisades, that their relationship to the wall and how close it was kind of a sign of resistance in my mind. It was a sign that, no, we're here. And so I think its location is in everything. It connects so much to where our culture and history lies.
big visions. What are the plans? What are the dreams for the Point House, for the actual physical Point House space in Xitgakuan?
Well, I'm going to start saying names. Northwind Architects is who I approached first. Consequently, Armando Diesis, who's from Angoon, who's an indigenous architect, is who I'm wanting to work with. So they have been my first phase of just opening the door to like, okay, what will I need to do to get plans to break ground? So essentially following a pre-development grant with the Rasmussen Foundation. And in that, I plan on showing our letter of intent, giving them a breakdown of cost analysis of what will it take to get my renderings, what will it take to get plans. Also in there, I'm going to do historical research. I've already been doing, but my ultimate plan is to ask Rasmussen for this small rolling grant so that I can present a larger grant to them that says this is now. I want to come with a completed plan and say this is who we are, what we're doing, what we need, and who can help us. So my first step was Northwind Architects. I'm also presenting to the Baranof Island Housing Authority. For people who don't know what that is in Juneau or anywhere who's listening, it's Sitka's version essentially of Tlingit and Haida Regional Housing Authority. So they work on indigenous housing issues. We are addressing in our plan also long-term housing, what that will look like. Louise would probably be a benefactor in this. I wish she was present to be able to discuss this, but it would be, you know, we want to create some long-term housing solutions for indigenous Kiksotik Island House members, but also the space above. I mean, hotels costs when we go over for these things. I want to create a space for my elders where my Kiksotik people can stay, where they have a place to stay, and also visiting scholars or people that we're working with, because for them to get a feel of what that is, I think it's more poignant to have stepped in a place like that and stayed in a place like that to understand what the importance of it is. I think clan house culture is something maybe intrinsic. It's inside of us. And so it's kind of like peeling back an onion. So letting those people stay there. And now it's not going to be like an Airbnb or anything of that nature. It's just I want to use it for clan related purposes. And maybe that don't just benefit our clan, but Tlingit indigenous people as a whole, people who are coming up to support what we're doing or take a look at what we're doing, we can house them. If we need legislation to come to talk about why the herring are protected to or why it's important to protect the herring, we have a place for them to stay. We can invite them and say, stay in our clan house. We'll tell you a story. And so, yeah, like I said, I want to continually say more will be revealed. I think once the doors are open, the sky's the limit. You know, there's a lot of opportunity there.
Do you have any more thoughts that you want to share on the Point House restoration or on herring protectors?
No, I just would want to say to people, I think I'm approaching this project with an open mind and an open heart. I think, like I said, our model may not be the model for everybody. We plan on documenting this. We want to make a documentary. So that's definitely in our sights. And we're not saying that the way that we're doing things is the right way for everybody. You know, clan history, clan property, all of those things can be complicated. And so as opposed to saying like, look, we're doing this or we are going to do this, this is just one way of saying this works for us and this is what we're doing to make it work. I mean, I'm so lucky to have people like Louise Brady behind me who can guide me and the people who passed the property to me that they saw the vision that we saw. And I would love to see this in their lifetime for them. I would encourage anybody if they want to reach out to me. I'm accessible on social media. If you have opinions or ways to fundraise, if you have money you want to give us, any of those things, feel free to reach out. Or if you see me in the grocery store, stop me and ask me about it. I'm an open book, and I'm trying to do things the right way. And my intent is not to offend anybody. And I hope that by taking action that I don't. I hope it inspires other people to want to rebuild. And maybe ultimately down the road that I can consult with people or help people in the grant writing process, that the research that we do can be passed on to other people to rebuild or revitalize their clan houses as well.
Do you have any more thoughts to share on how this fits into the larger land back movement that is growing across the United States?
Don't forget that indigenous land ownership from individuals is just as important as clan or tribes. don't forget that as individuals, we come together and we create a whole. It doesn't need to be a tribe-centric operation. Land back can be individual and clans. And we are as important as the overall narrative because we fit into that. We help define what that means. The tribe doesn't exist without us, and we don't exist without the tribe. So don't worry about whether or not I'm not beating down the doors of tribes right now to be in support of this. I really want this to be a clan-centric operation, and yeah, land back means something different for everybody.
Klein Akbuk, big thanks for being here, and thanks for trusting us with the Point House Restoration story.
And Herring Protectors, thanks for having us.
To learn more about the crucial work to protect herring in Southeast Alaska, head to herringprotectors.org. And to learn more about the growing land back movement in the United States, head to landback.org.